This episode is sponsored by Analog Devices, partners of the Manufacturer Podcast.
Today on the Manufacturer Podcast, we welcome our sponsors, Analog Devices, onto this final episode of the Digital Transformation series. Plus, news from around the world, both manufacturing related and utterly unrelated. Friday the 5th of April, and yeah, we're at the end of this Digital Transformation series, and I'm joined by Joe, James and Molly. Hello folks, how are we doing?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi Tom.
How was the Easter weekend, everyone?
Expensive, because I've got five kids.
No joke, loads of chocolate, I'd imagine. And loads of mess, right? Like, do you have to buy like all five of your kids individual Easter eggs? Oh, I guess the youngest might not be too bothered, right? How old's the youngest again?
She's two.
Yeah, is she? Do you need to get her an Easter egg to avoid?
Well, where we live, there are no Easter eggs, so it was just basically chocolate bars. So we got Toblerone, we got Cadbury's, we got Snickers, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. But no Easter eggs here, but you do get people self-flagellating up and down the road.
Yeah, we tried to touch on this a bit last week, didn't we? But I feel like it got lost a bit. Go on, do explain.
Philippines, big Catholic country. My wife's Catholic, and at Easter, it's like a repenting for your sins throughout the year.
Look, I was raised a Catholic, and I never got told to do that.
No, I don't know. But yeah, people here, what they do is they walk up and down the road, literally whipping themselves up and down the road. But what they do beforehand is there's usually an old guy, and he's like a wizened guy, and he usually cuts their back first with a razor blade. So they have these little tiny cuts in their backs. And then when they whip themselves, it bleeds. It makes it bleed like a lot more. So the blood isn't from the self-flagellation, from somebody having cut them first. I've got a video of it I can share with you, because there was a guy here the other day by our house doing it, like doing the cuts. And then obviously once they start walking around and whipping themselves, the cuts stay open and they bleed. And it's just like, yeah, that's the whole point of it.
Does this old wizened guy go door to door then, asking people if they want to join in?
I think people go to his house. You get one in each like cul-de-sac, and he's the guy you go to when you want to be mutilated a little bit on your back, I guess, before you start self-flagellating.
I hope he cleans the razor blades between
each patient. But it is quite a spectacle.
Oh, I bet.
I just find something really funny about the word flagellate. I don't know what it is.
I know.
Some words are just funny, aren't they?
It's because it's a very funny word. That's why you find it funny. That's a funny word. Phlebotomy is also a funny word.
Yeah.
My dad thinks trousers is a funny word.
Trousers is quite a funny word when you think about it.
Trousers is quite a funny word when you think about it, yeah.
With the Easter weekend, obviously, the clock's changed as well, which is a good thing. I won't have it, but that's not a good thing. That is a wholly positive thing that now we're going to get slightly... obviously, it doesn't affect James, because yeah, he doesn't live in the UK, but your predecessor Molly, Lana, she just seemed obsessed with darkness, didn't she, and winter and it always used to annoy me.
Yeah, she was some sort of closet Disney witch. She loved the winter, she loved being cold, didn't like being hot.
That's not me. I like the sun.
That's good.
You get up and it's lighter, like, and you feel more awake. I feel like if you've got sunlight coming through in the morning, it doesn't feel like you're getting up in the middle of the night to go to work. You actually don't like that. You're like,
oh, correct. Yeah.
Absolutely. Like, I don't see how you can. Yeah, I don't see how you can't prefer it.
Yeah.
Like you say, you get up, you feel better. You get, you know, like the evenings are longer as well.
Yeah. It's when you leave work and it's already like dark, and then you get home, you're like, well, what am I going to do now? It's dark, I'll go to bed.
Yeah, it's horrible.
Nothing else to do.
that's one thing I've actually said to my wife as well. I said, when we go to the UK, it's going to be June. So it's like probably probably the best month, I think, possibly for her. Yeah. And I said, like, it might be light at 4 a.m. and it might still be light at 10 p.m. All depends. Mm. Bear in mind, she's lived her entire life. The sun comes up at 6 and it goes down at 6.
Mm.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's like, do you know what I mean? Little things like that. It's like, wow.
Yeah, that's going to be a bit of a shock to the system, isn't it? I've been on holiday to sort of that kind of latitude level. And it's a weird one, right? Because not only does it get dark at the same time every day, you guys don't really get a dusk, do you? It just, sun just drops just out of the sky, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, the sun's setting. Wait, I'll go for a piss. Oh, it's gone, basically. It is. That's pretty much what it's like.
The other thing about the good weather coming makes me think it's, you know, summer's coming. And this summer, there's an international tournament.
Oh, yeah.
And it's coming home. And I'm going... the last few years, I was always a bit more sceptical in my younger age, but in the last few years, I am fully gripped by either Euros or World Cup fever, whatever it is. And I just think we're going to win every tournament that we enter now. And you know what? If you don't think we're not going to win, then I don't want to watch any England games with you, to be honest.
No, I've got no room for that sort of negativity. In Jude we trust, Tom, right?
Ah, Jude. God, we love Jude. So I'm going to, me and some mates are going to Germany on the opening weekend. So it's Germany Scotland's the Friday, but when we're going on the Saturday, and we're staying in Dortmund because it's relatively close to Gelsenkirchen, where the first game is being, well, the first England game is being played. And so, yeah, we're going out there. They're staying on a bit longer. I'm coming back home because Katie, my lovely girlfriend, it's her birthday on the Tuesday, the 18th. So I thought I won't, you know, come on, that's a bit much, isn't it? You've got to come home for her birthday. But I am going for a couple of days. And she was like, why are you going to... She's just baffled by anything to do with football. She can't understand why I'm so into it. She says, why are you going to Germany for 2 days just to watch a game of football? Because it's coming home, that's why.
you're not going to the actual game though, right, Tom? You're just fan parking it, right?
Fan parking it, yeah.
That'd still be amazing though, mate.
You're just watching it in Germany.
Yes, correct.
Okay, no, I get her point. I don't understand.
So do I, Molly. So do I, because I'm not a football fan.
I get football, but I mean...
No, I'm not a football fan. So
the thing is, like, there'll be fans from like all over the place, right? I'm not sure who's playing in Dortmund that sort of.
So you're going for the atmosphere
week or around that time?
Yeah, going for the atmosphere. I mean, originally we were going to stay in Munich, which wouldn't. I don't think there'd have been many England fans in Munich. But the sort of the thought process is that those that aren't staying in Düsseldorf or in Gelsenkirchen, which isn't a very big place, by the way, so they'd either be in Düsseldorf or Dortmund. So the hope is that those that haven't got tickets, because it's really hard to get tickets to the games, right? Like really, really hard. So, and expensive. So, you know, next best thing is to lash yourself in a fan park and paint your face red and white. And
made by a moron today is a football themed song. So it's quite on point that you've brought this up today.
Love it. All right, let's save that. We're going to need to move it on for now because we've spoken too much dross, sadly. I'm delighted to say that we have our series sponsors, Analog Devices, speaking to us on today's episode. Fiona Tracy is the Managing Director for Industrial Automation at ADI. Here she is having a chat with me about the impact the industrial world has had on our planet, how can manufacturers ensure optimal efficiency in their plants, and within the factory of the future, how can they truly harness technology to achieve that efficiency? Let's have a listen to Fiona.
Hello, my name is Fiona Tracy. I am the Managing Director of the Industrial Automation Group in Analog Devices.
So for anyone that doesn't know, maybe start by telling us a bit about Analog Devices.
Yes. So Analog Devices is a global supplier of semiconductors. We have about 10,000 engineers globally working on solving some of the toughest engineering problems. We work across markets and across segments. And today, my focus is on the industrial automation market.
Look, industrial technology is clearly a key area for you guys. And indeed, you know, this is part of a digital transformation series. Could you please tell us a little bit about industrialization and its impact on the world and society generally? I mean, we're always flying the flag for manufacturing and how great it is, but it hasn't all been positive in terms of impact, certainly when we look at that environmental piece.
Yes, absolutely. So I guess we're living really in a time of extraordinary change when we look at the impact that, you know, every government, every business, every individual is going to be impacted by things like computing power, connectivity, artificial intelligence, and other innovative technologies. And this is a revolution that's spreading, you know, across the globe with incredible speed. But, you know, industrialization and new technology hasn't always been a force for good. We see that, you know, over the last 50 years, 50% growth in income creating the American middle class. People were lifted out of poverty in China, more than 4,000% increase in global trade. So explosion in global trade. But the cost, as you rightly mentioned, has come to the environment, right? We see we're creating 7.6 billion tons of waste just in the US alone, industrial waste. Majority of energy for the sector still comes from fossil fuels. And when we think of the supply chain journey, if you take a simple screw that might be manufactured in Asia, it has to traverse 12,000 or more kilometers to get to Europe where it's used. So could we make products closer to the source of use? And of course, then we have this issue in Europe and globally as well around accessing skilled labor. And that's a problem that's getting worse. And, you know, we in ADI believe that technology has the power to transform how and also where we make things. But the time is now really for this opportunity.
And certainly back to that sustainability piece, you know, industry has undoubtedly been part of that problem. But the way we see it, it can certainly be part of the ongoing solution as well. So how can businesses make an impact in relation to their sustainability goals in the area of industrial manufacturing?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's two key things to think about. Energy demand is actually going to double when we look out to 2050. So that means today we're going to need twice as much energy as we do today. So a quarter of that energy is probably going to come from renewable energy sources. And ADI has been investing in a lot of technologies to support this pivot towards scalable, renewable energy sources. But actually what's really striking when you look at energy demand into the future is that half of that energy in the future has to come from what we're calling energy efficiencies. And if you look at data from the Paris Accord, it shows this like 50% up to 50% of energy will have to come from efficiency. And if you think about that really simply, it means every joule of energy that you consume today will need to be used twice as efficiently in the future. So for a manufacturing sector, for every joule of energy used to produce one screw, it'll have to produce two screws in the future. So that's quite a big transformation. And then what's happening is, on top of that, you have society's demands for personalized or more customized outputs. So there's huge transformation and change needed in how we manufacture goods. Mm. And of course, this is daunting, but it's also exciting, right? So one of the things that excites us in ADI and one of the big challenges we're helping to solve.
And then if we look into the future, what are some of the key areas within the digital factory of the future? And, you know, there's some speculation to exactly what that will look like. Some businesses are kind of realizing that potential. But what are some of those key areas in that digital factory where technology will enable efficiency improvements?
Yeah, so when we look at efficiency improvements, I guess we think about re-architecting the factory and the systems for efficiency. And that really means re-architecting from the ground up, targeting innovation and orchestrating combined powers of things like sensing, actuation, precision measurement, connectivity, computing, and of course, intelligence at the edge. And we see that, you know, by getting closer to the edge, getting closer to the source of the true measurement data, we can capture these analog signals, which is, you know, the heart of our DNA, and interpret them to drive a data-driven transformation. So when we look at digital factories of the future, there's, I guess, three key trends. One is, can we capture data? You know, there's a lot of data in the factories today, but it's not necessarily accessible, or it's not accessible centrally, so it can't be utilized to make informed decisions. So can we capture data through better connectivity networks? Two is, right, we've got all this data now. Can we capture new types of data? And that's like deploying sensors and sensorization of the factory floor to get new types of data to make more informed decisions, things like asset health information, how much raw materials we're using. And then three is deploying more and more automation and advanced robotics. And so we're using data and insights to inform decision making, and then we're deploying automation and advanced robotics to drive productivity and, you know, overall efficiency. So and a thing about this is you're also simultaneously increasing flexibility. And that whole thing about flexibility is, as we move towards making more goods sourced closer to the source of use, so green shoring or onshoring back to Europe, the really important thing is you can make a production line quite flexible, so you can change it to make different products with minimized downtime. And that comes from better control systems, better connectivity systems, and more insights from the edge.
You talk about connecting better, controlling better, interpreting better by adding edge intelligence to get insights. But what does that mean in practical terms? What are you guys doing with your customers?
So when we think about connectivity networks, a lot of connectivity networks in factories are today are field bus based. And we're working with our customers to upgrade those networks for bandwidth, so having much more traffic can traverse the network at any time, and adding time sensitivity capabilities so that different types of traffic can traverse that network in a way that ensures the critical control traffic in a factory is not compromised. So we can have both critical control traffic and all this new diagnostics information traversing the network. So networks now based on ADI technology are providing access to operational level insights. And this is going to enable more adaptive energy management at the factory level. So then we look at control systems. So control systems are, we talked about, becoming more flexible. So enabling them to become software configurable and moving from fixed function centralized control to actually flexible, software configurable, and modular based localized control. And this is as you know, things like drives are moving on to motors and they're becoming much more compact, or virtualized PLCs moving from, you know, traditional rack based systems that we would have had in a factory. So this is making manufacturing more modular or hyper agile, this idea of having the flex to make different types of products. So control systems based on ADI technology are, you know, maximizing operational efficiency to thereby minimize energy use. So it's about conserving energy through better control of operations. So the third area is all about capturing insights from the edge. And we mentioned sensorizing the factory floor. And this is where customers are coming to ADI to, you know, help them deploy more sensor capabilities. So there's three key areas we could look at. One is leveraging our time of flight capability, and that's unique accurate depth sensing, and that's for perception and awareness in autonomous robots. The second one would be something like our unique zero power position sensing capability for robotics. And this enables position information to be retained even when the power is off. But it would also enable maybe when a battery needs to be hot swapped on a robot, for example. And we also have a number of edge-based motor health or smart motor sensor systems for managing and monitoring the health of a motor. And what you see is that through these systems, you can increase yield and you can detect product defects early. And when you detect product defects early, or when you identify the machine is moving outside of spec, you can find that it's getting hot, burning excess energy. And localized machine learning from ADI can then enable real-time alerts, faster corrective action, localized decision, and less downtime. And most importantly, of course, less waste, because you're making less bad products that later get scrapped. So they're just kind of three examples that where ADI is working with customers to innovate and help reduce energy and drive efficiency in our factories.
Maybe one sort of final question to tie it together. Do you feel that the industry-wide companies are kind of getting this message, you know, to be more efficient, to be more sustainable, to do more with less? Because it's something that obviously, you know, the industry does need to adopt as fast as possible. Are you quite liking the pace of this at the moment?
That's a really good question. I read a report recently that talked about one of the things it talks about is the scale of the problem is quite big. So we actually have to collaborate and we need to work with innovative partners to drive some of this innovation faster. And that's one of the things ADI is trying to do. We have a development centre in Ireland. We have a co-creation space where we like to collaborate with our customers, with our customers' customers, with some of our partners. And this is all designed to accelerate innovation and to accelerate adoption of some of the new types of technology that ADI is bringing to the market. The other issue that I see is that when we look at it just as sustainability to reduce energy consumption or to make something more efficiently, it's one lens to look at it. But number of lighthouse projects, which are a World Economic Forum program, are actually showcasing the business case for change. They're showcasing that it's actually profitable to change, because when people deploy more digitization, more efficient energy management, they're actually utilizing less energy, they're creating less waste, and they become more profitable as a result, because they've got a better eyes on their business through the data we talked about. And so the business case for change is actually strong, and it's strong not just from the environmental aspects, but actually from the profitability aspects as well. And I think that's what will help to drive the change faster.
Really interesting stuff, Fiona. Thank you very much for your time on the Manufacturer Podcast.
Thank you for having me. Great to chat with you today.
Worth mentioning that if you're attending Embedded World next week in Nuremberg, then do make sure to check out Fiona's keynote session, How the Intelligent Edge May Enable the Sustainable Factory of the Future. That's taking place on Wednesday, the 10th of April. This episode is sponsored by Analog Devices. Analog Devices is a global technology leader that bridges the physical and digital worlds to enable breakthroughs at the intelligent edge. With their complete portfolio of innovative solutions, ADI can resolve your most complex industrial challenges. They'll empower you to increase productivity on factory floors, enable personalized output with flexible manufacturing, and benefit from insights that reduce material and energy costs. As a trusted advisor, ADI works hand in hand with their customers to co-create easily adopted solutions, enable digital transformation, and build a more sustainable industrial future. ADI ensures today's manufacturing innovators stay ahead of what's possible. To find out more about ADI's technology, visit analog.com.
Hello, listener. Just a quick one. Are you coming to the Smart Manufacturing and Engineering Week in Birmingham this year? Because you should be. Not least because we've got our Manufacturing Digitalization Summit, which is in its fourth year now. It's running on the 5th and 6th of June, and it will focus on the application of digital technologies that are enhancing the processes, efficiencies, and outcomes of the manufacturing industry.
You get quite a broad range of manufacturing sectors, and some are ahead of the curve and some are just starting.
It's just fantastic to see everybody together, really working together and sharing ideas and knowledge, and that's how we're genuinely going to transform the industry.
Across the same 2 days and back for its 7th year, we've got our Industrial Data and AI Summit. This is specifically for analysts, scientists, and other data professionals. This summit drills down beyond digital transformation and dashboards to topics of greater intellectual challenge, depth, and focus.
Take off the sort of the technical language and all of the legalese that might associate with this and say, how are you dealing with this in your own business?
It's quite nice to know you're not alone, that you're not the only person having that challenge or coming up against that barrier or that obstacle.
Both summits will run in our usual roundtable discussion sessions format, which allows you to share pain points, experiences, and even explore solutions with one another. So get yourself to the NEC in Birmingham on the 5th and 6th of June. Book your place by visiting themanufacturer.com/events. That's themanufacturer.com/events.
Time to take a look at some headlines now. Ransomware, the biggest threat to operations. More news on cyber. Victor Luff, cybersecurity business lead at Schneider Electric. Molly's written it. And yeah, it's about the NIS2 legislative changes and the impact of this on the supply chain. Go and check that story out. There's also a few interesting bits on AI. Massive excitement around AI at the moment, but the experts are still telling us that manufacturing is dipping its toes in the water rather than fully realizing its potential power. Artificial intelligence will be a game changer for the UK's manufacturing industry, but only if businesses embrace it. That's according to Hema Ramorthy, data and AI lead at Digital Catapult. Find that one in our industrial data and AI section. And then back on to digital transformation, back on to the digital transformation channel, we've got two articles, one from me and one from Bush, understanding your need for AI manufacturing, and if your heads are in the cloud, put them together. These are both pieces that we've done in partnership with Microsoft. Insights from Matt Walsh, Managing Director, Manufacturing UK and Nordics lead at Microsoft. Insights from him in that article. And then in our automation channel, we've got news about this year's Robotics and Automation for a Sustainable Future. This is an event that will explore how greater adoption can address the issues of productivity and net zero challenges, as well as labour shortages. The event will be held at the Manufacturing Technology Centre on the 14th and the 15th of May. And then quickly in leadership, certainly worth mentioning this because it's significant. The UK manufacturing industry showed some signs of recovery in March, with production and new orders both picking up. That's according to the latest S&P Global UK Manufacturing PMI. The first time the industry has recorded growth since June 2012. This is one that...
July 2022.
What did I say?
June 2012. You're only 10 years out.
Did I say June 2012?
2012, yeah. It's pretty close.
Are you sure I said that?
Yeah, you said June 2012.
Yeah, you did, mate.
You did.
Really?
So it's like 2 years versus 12 years. I mean, sounds way better. But...
Well, no, that's what I meant to say. It's written right here in front of me, July 2022. I said June 2012. What's wrong with me?
But it's much better. Your headline's way bigger.
Well, yeah, and you know, don't let the truth get in the way of a good story. Go on, then tell us about this, because it is good news.
Yeah. So like you said, the latest S&P Global UK Manufacturing PMI was 50.3 in March. Now, for those who don't know, anything above 50 is basically growth and expansion. Anything below 50 is contraction. And this is the first time we've been above 50 since July 2022. You got me doing it now, Tom. It is quite big news. And also, just to give it kind of some perspective, I am not a fan of Brexit at all. Okay. But we should just put this into comparison that the Eurozone manufacturing PMI yesterday was 46.1. So that's a 3-month low. So the Eurozone has been in a period of decline now for 1 year. So just, basically for a comparison, UK is now showing signs of growth. Eurozone is still in decline. And having had a look at the figures from the Eurozone, the only countries in the Eurozone at the moment which are showing some kind of signs of positivity are Greece and Spain. So, yeah, like I said, I'm not a fan of Brexit, but it's good to give these things some perspective. Mm-hmm. So the fact that the UK is actually in growth is a big deal anyway. But when you compare it to Europe, it's like a really big deal.
Check all of that news out on the manufacturer.com. All right, well, we've had our sponsors on for a chat. We've taken a look at the latest headlines on the manufacturer website, which means there can only be time for one more thing, and that is Made by a Moron.
Made by a moron.
Made by a moron. Gawang Tanga.
Phones. Mobile phones. More specifically, and I think you've probably all encountered this before, you have a smartphone reaches a certain point in its life where it just can't be bothered to charge anymore. You plug it in and a little lightning bolt appears on the battery, and then if like you put it down and then there's the connection just decides to give up the ghost and just thinks, oh, actually sod it, I won't bother charging. So you put it on overnight and you wake up and you've got like 3% charge left, and it's just infuriating.
You're an iPhone user, aren't you?
Yes. Is that my first mistake?
No. I've got an iPhone too.
Tom's an iPhone man as well.
Are you suggesting that the iPhone, was made by a moron?
I know where you're going with this, Tom. I know. Yeah, it's a bold statement, isn't it?
It is a bold statement.
But no, I know. Actually, in retrospect, it's probably made by a genius, because what it does is it makes you think, I probably need a new iPhone. So in essence, it's made by a genius because you go out and buy a new one. But practically, I wanted to throw my phone at the wall on numerous occasions over the last couple of weeks, and probably will do so until I bite the bullet and buy a new iPhone.
So they are designed to start conking out, I think, aren't they?
That's what I've heard. Yeah,
it's genius, but boy, is that dastardly.
Yes.
He was a clever dude, wasn't he? To be fair to him,
it happened to such an extent whereby I thought I plugged it in overnight, thought it was charging, it wasn't, and then by the time I woke up the following morning, it was completely dead. So then I had to basically hold the charging lead into the phone in the hope that it was actually charging, and then just wait for the phone to just flash into life again. It's just annoying beyond words.
I can imagine Steve Jobs sat in, like, you know, one of those big sort of secret meetings with just his kind of inner circle, you know, back in the day, and being like, look, we're going to design this phone, but we're going to design it to break after 3 years. And I'd be like, Steve, what? What the hell? That's a terrible idea. Like, no. But listen, we're going to bring out newer ones so that when the old one breaks, they're going to have to buy a new one. And then he sat back in his chair with his hands like that.
And stroked a white cat. I'd prefer it though, just upfront and honest about it, and just like after 3 years, your iPhone just self-destructs.
Good episode. Thanks for joining me. Oh, that's us finished now on Digitran, and we'll be moving on to to People and Skills, PNS. We're gonna have to crack on pretty swift with that, I think, listener. So there'll be an episode of that next week, I would suspect. Hope to see you there, Molly, Joe, James. Bye now.
Bye. Bye bye.
This episode is sponsored by Analog Devices, partners of the Manufacturer Podcast.